storytelling. It is, hopefully by the end of our session today, it'll be a tool. Well, I know it will be a tool that you have in your tool belt to tell kids about Jesus. And, you know, storytelling, as much as I love it and it's so much fun and there's so many different ways to do it, it is a tool. And like anything else you do in your classroom, you don't do the same thing every week, because no matter how good it is, once the kids get used to it or comfortable with it, sometimes it can just become, this is what we do. Does that make sense? Yeah. So instead of being, oh, what a great story, it'll be, oh, another story. And they'll be glad, but it won't have the same impact. So as passionate as I am about storytelling, I use it as a tool sometimes. And that's the key, is to pray and ask the Lord, is this a lesson for storytelling? And if so, which kind? And if it's not, that it's okay. I think sometimes we need permission to not do things, because we always think we have to do everything. So you don't have to do storytelling all the time, but use it when the Lord shows you. So what is storytelling? It's the art of using language, vocalization, gesture, and or physical movement to reveal the elements and images of a story. There's so many reasons I love storytelling, and one of them is because it can hold, go ahead, you can give it to her, because it can hold the attention of any child. Any of you that are parents in here, I know you're all teachers. It doesn't matter what age you're teaching. You tell a story that the kids like and they are with you. You know, remembering back to my kids when they were young, we have three kids, they're all adults. And we're grandparents, yay. When my kids were young, their favorite story was how I met their dad and how I knew I was pregnant with each of them. That was their favorite story. And I could tell that story every day as far as they were concerned. And they were enraptured with it because they identified with it, obviously, for one thing. But, you know, get one detail wrong in a story that they know and they're all up in your face. But you forgot this and you forgot that. That's a good thing. That's what we want our kids to be, so familiar with the Bible stories that if they ever hear a version of it, or when they go to the movies and see Exodus, or, you know, the prince of whatever his name was, you know, when Disney does the movies, we want them to be able to see what's wrong in those. We want them to be so familiar with the truth that if something is not the truth, that just like when they were little, it'd be like, that's not how the story goes. That's not how my Sunday school teacher or my mom told it. That's not what the Bible says. So don't be afraid of that. And when kids correct you, whichever color they were that do all the correcting, if they correct you in a story, that's a good thing because it means they're listening. I also love storytelling because it can break all age barriers and it can connect all ages in your Sunday school. Ours happens to be broken down, you know, kindergarten through fifth grade is what my husband oversees. So ours, we're differentiated by ages and grades, but I know there are some churches that you've got, you know, third and fourth together. Some have, smaller churches have K through five together. And a story can link all of those kids. They're all going to get something different out of it, of course, depending on their age level, but they're all going to get something. I told you fifth grade is the highest grade we have. And I have to say, fifth grade boys are tough. You know, it's tough to hold their attention. It's tough to get them interested in things sometimes. I do storytelling mostly in telling missionary stories, which is my other workshop today about missionaries and their great adventures. But I tell about missionaries and their great adventures using storytelling. And we do it in a general assembly. So I've got first through fifth graders in there. And I will tell them a story. It's usually about 20 minutes. Well, I'd done it for about a month on every service. We had the whole month of January, every service was about missions. And one day I went about a half an hour early. I had to go in the fifth grade classroom and ask the teacher something. And there's one of the fifth grade boys, came early, slung over the chair, you know, his hands back. And he's just like, tell me something. That's what he looks like, right? So I walk in the room and he goes, are you going to do one of those long old stories again? And I was so like, oh no, because first of all, I thought it was going well. The kids were giving me good feedback. They were listening. You know, you can tell by their faces and the interaction. And I thought it was going so well. And now there's this kid asking me if I'm going to do one again. And so a little deflated, but I was, so I couldn't lie to him. So I said, I mean, I'm feeling almost apologetic. And I said, well, yeah, I am. And he goes, yes, I love those stories. And honestly, it's like, okay, if I can reach a fifth grade boy, I know I've got the room. It can cross all ages. So it's a great tool for that. I want to say that even if you think you're not a storyteller, I can almost guarantee that you are. It's just maybe you're not thinking of yourself that way. If you've ever told your kids stories, if you've ever related an experience to someone else on the phone, in person, you've told a story. So you are good at it. I just want to give you some tools to make you maybe feel a little more confident so that by the time you're done with me, I want you to walk out of here feeling like I can do this. I can tell a story. I am a storyteller. And then it's just, you're already rolling your eyes. You can do it, I promise. So that by the time you're preparing, not for tomorrow, because hopefully you're already prepared for tomorrow, but for the following Sunday, then this can be something that you can use. All right, the first thing to go through are the elements of storytelling. And remember, really, the only part, the only thing you know you always have with you when you do storytelling is yourself. So how can we utilize our whole body to help get the story across? Well, the first thing is your voice. Use accents if you can in telling the story. Kids think accents are hysterical. And so again, I'm thinking about the be fun. If you don't think you're a fun person and you can do an accent, do it. As you're telling the story, maybe there's a certain part and you just want to mix it up a little bit. So start talking like a Southern Belle, you know, and just tell a story that way. And then the kids are like, what is she saying? How did she change like that? And at least it gets them interested. And that's it. That's all I can do. Because anything else I do, I don't know why this is, but any other accent I try to do, I always end up like I'm from India. And I'm talking like this, and how do you, I don't know what happened, so that's it. I don't have any, but I know some of you are bilingual, and you can play up the accent of the other language, so do it. The one thing I would caution you about accents is to be careful, because we want the kids, it's okay if they laugh at us. We want them to enjoy our story and laugh at us, but we never want them to laugh at a people group. So you can tell the tone of your class, and if you feel like it's just gone wrong, then don't use it. But, you know, just keep that in mind. Also, next is characterizations, which means giving each person in your story their own voice. So I personally have to stick with the story with only two people in it, because once I pass two, somehow in my mind, I get mixed up. Although the kids love that because then they can correct me. But I'm thinking about the story of Mary and Martha. And when you think of that story, or for the guys, it could be, you know, David and Jonathan, and any pairing that you like, or Saul and David. When I think of Mary and Martha, I think of, you know, Mary, and of course she's very short and very tiny, and every hair is in place. I mean, she's just neat, you know, and small and quiet. So if I'm telling a story, that's the picture I have in my mind. And when I think of Martha, honestly, I think of me. I mean, she's taller, she's bigger, she's busier. And so if I'm going to tell a story, then I'm going to become those characters if I'm going to do it like this. And when I marry, you know, my body and my voice are going to be a little softer, and I'm just going to be a little gentler the way I stand and the way I look at you. And, you know, I just love Jesus. And anytime he comes around, I want to be with him, and I want to hear what he has to say. And, you know, the world just fades away whenever Jesus is around. I just want to look at him. But my sister, I'm always busy. I mean, if he's going to come, that's fine. But somebody has to take care of him when he comes. We don't want him going away hungry. There's so much to do, and you've got to help me. I need help in the kitchen. I need help doing the living room. Got to get the pillows out. I know. And all that's good. But what's most important is hearing what he has to say. Well, nobody's going to hear what he has to say if they're starving. So become the two characters for the kids. It's fun, and they love it. The speed of your voice can change what's happening in a story. And usually you slow down if you're sad or the story is sad. And don't we naturally do that in real life? When we have to convey bad news, it's hard to say it, isn't it? We don't just run in and blurt it out normally. You know, we're kind of hesitating when we talk because we don't really want to deliver the news. And we slow down. We need to remember, we know this, but the kids don't always know this, that the stories in the Bible are true. And the people that experienced the things in the Bible were real people with real emotions. As we've grown up, we're getting more of the lesson from the story and how does God want us to apply it to our life. But kids are still just learning the story. Thank you. So as you go back and you're reading your story, think about, what emotions are involved in this story? Is there sadness? Is there joy? Is there amazement? Is there like incredulity? Is that a word? Is that how you say it?
Good.
Is, you know, are people questioning? Are they confused? What emotions are in that story? Because your voice can convey that. Especially for me doing the Passion Week. You know, the crucifixion and all that is entailed. You know, the kids in our ministry, they hear it every year in their Sunday school, sometime during the year. They hear it at Easter, and they hear it every VBS. So my concern is that they're going to hear it, and they've already heard it. So they're not going to hear it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Every time we tell a story, we want the kids to have a reason to listen, especially if they're churched kids, because they've heard all the major stories. By the time they're in third grade, they know everything. You know, they know all the major stories. So what happens is they walk in the class and you've got written on the board the story of Jonah. They walk in the class and they go, Jonah whale spit up, I'm done. And they're done, because that's what they know. So when you start telling the story, they already know it. So they're thinking about whatever else they're thinking about. We want to give them, and we want to use storytelling as a way to get them to listen, give them a reason to listen. Doing this, slowing down your voice, gives them one of those reasons to listen, because it's different than just the way I'm talking now. And I was doing VBS a few years back, and we were coming up to the point where I was going to present the crucifixion again. And I was just so dissatisfied within myself because I wanted a way to do it. These kids have heard it every year. I mean, I know there's new kids, but you know, the majority of kids, they've heard it every year. Didn't want them checking out. So here's the idea that the Lord gave me. And I'd like you to participate a little bit in this if you feel comfortable doing that. But I told the kids I was going to tell them a story. But before I did that, I wanted to know about the best day of your whole life. So can somebody tell me the best day of your whole life?
Uh-huh. My birthday.
Your birthday. That's a great day. I know. I love birthdays. Great day. Good job. Anybody else have a great day, like the best day of their lives?
Uh-huh. When I got married.
When you got married. Great day. Yay. Anything else? Anybody else have a great day?
I had my first baby.
Yay, babies. Okay. Anything else?
Uh-huh. My first grandbaby.
Yay, for grandbabies. Yes, yes, yes. And those poor mothers who don't know what they're doing, right? Anything else? Yes.
Homeschool field trip days.
Yes. Hey, wait, you were my student. Wait. Those are great days. What about now? Let's think about the other side of it. And can you think of, and you don't have to share this if you don't want, because I know sometimes this is hard, but can you share maybe one of the worst days of your life?
Mm-hmm. The day my husband passed away.
Yeah, sorry. Mm-hmm. Very sad day, I'm so sorry. Uh-huh.
The day I found out I had diabetes.
Mm. Mm-hmm. We lived through that too in our house. Mm-hmm. Yes, terrible, terrible. Anything else that you can share?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I know. Sorry. Kids too, you know, they have worse days, and some of them were actually quite shocking to me. You know, the day my brother went to jail, you know, the day my friend got stabbed, you know, I mean, it's just, and this is only going up to fifth grade, you know. Thank you for sharing your great days, and thank you for sharing your worst days. Now, the story I'm going to tell you is about the greatest and the best day in the history of the world, and the worst day in the history of the world. Are you ready to hear it? We all know who Jesus was. He was a good man, and he did everything good. He loved people. He ate with people. He had parties with people. He taught people about God. He taught people things they never knew before. He healed people. He told stories. He only did good, and he was loved by so many people. But there were some other people who hated Jesus, and they didn't like the good things he was doing, and they were jealous of him, and they just didn't like a newcomer coming on the scene and taking all the people that used to go to their church away with him. So they didn't like him. So they thought, okay, well, what can we do to stop Jesus? I know, let's arrest him. And they did. But after they arrested him, they decided that's not bad enough. What else can we do? I know, let's beat him up. And they did. And they beat him up so much, and there was so much blood on Jesus that people who knew him couldn't even recognize him. And then they said, that's not good enough. What else can we do? And they threw him in jail. And I know some of you kids know what jail is like. And it's not a good place. It's dirty. People there are mean. You don't get any food. It's bad. But that wasn't enough. Those people that didn't like Jesus thought, that's not enough to do to him. What else can we do? I know. Let's kill him. And they did. And that was the worst day in the history of the world. And you can tell just by slowing down my voice, just by talking a little softer, this is an important story, and it's sad. It really was the worst day in the history of the world. And the kids felt it too. Anytime you are conveying great emotion like that, you're going to draw them in because you believe it and they're feeling it. But remember, I also told you I was going to tell you about the best day in the history of the world. That actually happened 3 days after Jesus died. Who knows what happened 3 days after Jesus died? He rose from the dead, and that was the best day in the history of the world. And then, of course, I went on to finish the story. But what a difference, lowering your voice. If there's anything sad in the story, then incorporate that into the way that you're telling the story. Remember, we're convincing these kids that these stories are real. And we wouldn't want to talk about something sad as if, you know, okay, let's get over that. Let's go on to something else. I think about the widow, before we go on real quick, I think about the widow who was using her last oil and flour to make bread, and then her and her son were going to die, right? I mean, moms, how would you feel? Well, it's the last flour and the last oil. I'm going to make a bread for all of us, and then we're going to die. You would never go like that. So convey that, convey the desperation, convey the sadness and everything that goes into that story. That mom really felt those things. You want to raise your voice? Because that was going slow. Fast if you're excited or fearful. I mean, I always think about Zacchaeus, this poor little man. You know, everybody hated him. The Jews hated him because he was working for the Romans. The Romans hated him because he was a Jew. He really, we know, hated himself because he was so eager to follow Jesus because he knew he was doing wrong. He was like this little bubble of a man that nothing was going right in his life. And then he's heard about Jesus and he hears that Jesus is coming. So this man who's supposedly so prominent in the community, right? He's the tax collector. He's rich, which of course makes him better than anybody else. The man climbs a tree. Now, how many of you have moms and dads who are like managers at work or president of the company or, you know, a classroom teacher, right? So the kids are all raising their hand. Can you imagine them climbing a tree? And then it's like, No, they would never climb a tree. Well, Zacchaeus did, and because he was so excited to see Jesus, so he forgot what everybody else was thinking, and he climbed up that tree, and he's just sitting up there, and then in the distance, a little dust cloud comes because there's all these people walking, and pretty soon, he's all excited because he can actually see Jesus. He can pick out his figure in this crowd of people, but then, if that wasn't good enough, Jesus comes to the tree that he's sitting in, looks up at him, and says, "Come into your house tonight." Can you imagine how excited? All he wanted to do was see him, and now he's coming to his house, and he runs out of the tree, and he goes home, and go on in the story. Are you excited now? Are you excited for him? I am. All right, the volume of your voice, raising or lowering it for the effect that you want. Obviously, I lowered my voice when I told the crucifixion story, but you know what? Can we maybe, if they're quiet, open that door? Is it getting stuffy in here for you? Oh, that would be great. Thank you so much. But raising your voice, if there's a reason to raise it in the story. Again, the kids have heard the story of David and Goliath so many times, right? So what do they think? David, Goliath, stone, dead, done. So they're done. They're on thinking about or color, whatever, disrupting the person next to them, whatever it is they want to do. If we tell the story of David and Goliath, I mean, they weren't sitting in a conference room across the table from one another, you know, negotiating for how the battle was going to go. They're standing across a valley, and there's lots of noise there because they both got armies, right? And especially, I mean, they've got the armor clinking and all these other things going on. So when they talk to each other, they had to yell. So you can raise your voice to tell the story. You can also become the two people or represent the two people by going to opposite ends of the valley, which happens to be your Sunday school room at this point. So I'll just choose to be David over here. Well, who Goliath came out first, right? So I have to go be Goliath. So you're over here as Goliath. Oh, can you see him in here? But David is like way over there. So he's not gonna say, "Hey, who are you?" Right? He's going to have to yell, and I'm sorry if I hurt your ears on this end. "Who are you, you little dog?" Or as a kindergartner insulted someone the other day, "You chicken face." I don't know what that meant. But so I don't know. I suppose Goliath wouldn't say that, but I had to turn around because I was laughing so hard. Like, what kind of insult is that? Okay. So Goliath is yelling, "What? What are you, little dog, to come out and fight me?" And I actually can't remember what David said, but he would have to, I mean, I'd have to look it up again. But whatever he said, I'm going to yell it. So I'm going to yell back to you. And then you go over and, you know, big Goliath and David yelling back and forth. That's what really happened in the story. So let's do it in our classroom. All right, facial expression. You know from talking to people that your facial expression matches the emotion of what you're talking about, right? So the same thing has to go for the stories that you're telling. You think about the Israelites crossing the Red Sea, right? Okay, how many of you have ever been to the beach, right? Or a lake or anything with water, and yet we're telling the story like this. I'm just going to abbreviate it. You know, the children of Israel were running away from Egypt, right? The Egyptians, Pharaoh and the Egyptians, and they came to this a body of water, and they couldn't get across, and the army was behind them, and the water was in front of them, and so God told Moses, "Raise your staff." He raised his arm, and the water parted, and they walked through on dry land, and then he put his arm down, and then everybody drowned. Okay. Exactly. I mean, especially because the kids can connect, our kids can connect with water. Most of them know what it's like to go to the beach. They know what it's like to go to a lake or a river or something. Think of the amazement. I mean, what would you guys do if you went to the beach and the water parted? And it didn't just part, it was dry ground in the middle. Wouldn't you be a little amazed at that? Maybe a little scared? There was some relief going on because they thought they were about to be annihilated and now they have a way out. I want my face to show that. Yeah, they walked across on dry land and then everybody drowned. Like, no way, right? They walked across on dry land. Dry land. What do you think that felt like with walls of water? Would you be scared?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much emotion in these stories, so make sure that your face is conveying the emotion that's behind the story. Okay, body movement. We've done that a little bit, where you just move. You know, I was Mary over here, and Martha over here, Goliath over there, David over there. Even just walking around the room to tell a story. How many of you, when you're in the car or you're at home, you position your head to hear the TV or the music better? Do you ever do that? Mm-hmm. It's the same thing in the classroom. You know, some kids, I sound differently to you when I'm here than when I'm here, or even when I'm over here, right? You have to pay a little more attention because you can't hear me as well now, but I might come back to you, so that makes you nervous because what are you doing, right? Mm-hmm. Walk around the room when you're telling the story. Just the change in your voice distance from the kids helps them to listen, helps them to pay attention, because there's something different as each sentence goes by. I'm a different place in the room. You know, they have to turn their heads, they have to kind of listen, and for some, they're going to find their favorite spot where you talk, and then that's where most of their attention is going to be. I think if there's any movement in the story, especially the Old Testament, children of Israel, like, they walked like their whole lives, right? They walked for 40 years. So there should be some walking going on. The kids can follow you. I have them follow me around the classroom. And it's amazing to me how much they still listen, even though they're giggling and falling into chairs and tables and all that. It's just the movement, for some reason, helps them concentrate. And that's what we want, isn't it? We want them really listening to what we have to say. All right, using props, you don't need them because your body is your instrument, but if you have access to them, it's fun for the kids, and it does something else, which I'll tell you about. This is water, and anytime I have a story with water in it, my water comes out, and you can have as many of these as you want. This is just ribbon stapled. As the years have gone by, the staples are quite irritating, so I would wrap something around it to, you know, because, you know, they just get kind of pokey on this side. I used to be the one to hold the prop, and I would tell the story, and every time I'd say water, you know, I'd do something with the water, but then, probably you're already all thinking this, the kids should be the ones doing that, so I either give it to them in their seats, or they can come up in front of the class. Found out that coming up in front of the class actually works better, and so if I was doing a story, say, about the storm on the sea where Jesus calms the storm, I'd probably have 4 or 6 kids up here, and I'd give them all one, and I'd tell them, anytime I have, say, any reference to water, I want you guys to be the water, and you can splash without touching and all of that, right? So we go through the story. They're doing it, you know. What do you think the first thing these kids say when the story's over? I want to do that. Can I be the water? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So you pick 4 or 6 other kids, and they come up. And then the rest of the kids, I want to do it. So we end up doing it 3, sometimes 4 times. By the time we get to the 3rd time, I usually have one of the other kids ask, who do you think can tell the story now? Who knows it? And then they can come up and be the ones to tell the story. And then I was just doing that because it was fun and the kids liked it. But then I realized, okay, if I told the story of the calming of the sea one time, and then I said, we're going to review now, what is everybody in the class going to do? But we just reviewed 3 times because we told the story 4 times. And a student told the story, so they had to be listening. What an easy way to review, because they don't know they're reviewing. They just think they're retelling the story, but now they're getting it. And if they know there's a chance they can tell the story, they're listening better because they don't want to make a mistake when they come up front. Also, this is just, especially when we go on missions trips, because I like to use costumes. We actually have a costume closet at our church that I can go to. But when we take missions trips, you know, you only get like 25 pounds for 4 weeks or whatever. I've never gone that long. That was an exaggeration. I'm sorry. For 2 weeks. And so I try to always take this with me because it can be anything. So just so you, in case you ever need it, you put it across like this. Now I'm a girl. Lovely. And then to be a man, I can just, you know, I can do it like this. I can whatever. But if you want to be rich and famous, here's the trick. So if you're a soldier or pharaoh or anybody like that, diagonally. It's also a weapon in case you ever you ever need to slay anybody. I can't get it because of my mic. Do you mind? Thank you. So it'll distract me. Thank you so much. And so when you're telling the story, if you have a story that has someone rich, a man and a woman in there, and you use this, and then either you or the kids are moving it around while you're telling the story, again, thank you so much. It helps them to focus on what you're doing. All right, those are kind of the elements. Now, the ways to do storytelling, you still have a lot to choose from. Number one, the number one rule is to always have eye contact. What's the first thing that kids stop doing if they're lying to you? Looking in your eyes, right? Because they know you're going to read them like a book. When kids look in our eyes, we know they're being truthful, and they think the same thing. If I look at you, you know I believe what I'm saying, and you know I'm telling you the truth because I'm making eye contact with you. So it helps them to believe the truth. It also lets them know that you're interested in them as a whole. I hate that speaker's trick, and whenever I'm with speakers that do this, honestly, they've lost me. You know how they say, oh, just look above the heads of the people, right? Do you notice that when speakers do it? It makes me crazy. I honestly just want to stand up and go, do you see me? Do you care about me? When we look at the kids, they know that we care about them. So always have eye contact with them. Dramatic reading. It would kind of be like when I was telling the crucifixion story, only I had my Bible in front of me. I think sometimes, again, because we're so used to the stories, we get the Bible in front of us and we're reading a story and we're just concentrating on getting the words right. Well, how about if instead of just concentrating on getting the words right, let's add that emotion into the words that we're reading. The Israelites came to the Red Sea. They were trapped. The armies of Pharaoh were behind them, and whatever the words are. What difference between they came to the Red Sea, they were trapped, the armies of the Pharaoh were behind them, blah, 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 right? So just adding some emphasis when you're reading. That's the easiest thing to do. You could all do that tomorrow in class. One of my favorites, the next one, is to memorize a Bible story and present it. So somebody pick a Bible story outside of the Passion Week, because I usually don't do anything that could become funny for the Passion Week, because I always want that to remain holy. You know, I don't want anything goofy in there. So outside of that, somebody just pick a Bible story.
Jonah.
Okay, she was faster, sorry. Okay, Jonah, tell me the story of Jonah.
Well, God called him to go to Nineveh. He didn't want to go there, so he went the other way. Got on a boat. The boat started having a lot of problems with weather and everything else, so they figured it was Jonah the problem, so they threw him over the boat, and a whale swallowed him, and he was in the belly of the whale for 3 days.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there because you're doing a great job, but we just, for sake of time, okay. That's exactly what the kids do when they hear whatever story you're talking about. We do the same thing. This is what we know. So when you're going to do this, don't read it first. Tell yourself the story. What do you remember about Jonah and the whale or whatever story you picked? You write it down or tell yourself the story and then read it in the Word, because what will happen when you do that is you'll pick up on all the details that you forgot,
yeah,
or maybe that you never knew, you know, because you're reading it with your own preconceived ideas, right? So when you go back and read Jonah, you know, there's just going to be details that you left out. Then the next thing I do is I pretend that Peter Jackson, who is one of, I just love him as a director. I don't see everything he does, so don't get offended if he's done anything gross. But Lord of the Rings, he did an amazing job. I'm sorry if you're offended at that, but I'm sorry if you're offended. I just happen to love those books. So he's an amazing director. So I pretend that he is going to make a film of my story, and I don't have to pay for anything, and I have an unlimited budget and all the effects that I want. So if that was going to happen, what do I want in my movie? So thinking about Jonah, pick one day in that story. Let's say the day he heard God tell him to go to Nineveh. Let's pick that day. Okay, what was he doing? What? We don't know, so I get to make that up. So I'm going to decide that he was eating lunch. Okay, so while he was eating lunch, he heard God's voice. And maybe it's in the Bible and I've forgotten, so if it's in there, don't change it. But if it's not in there, so I'm going to say he was eating lunch. Well, how did he, what was going on around him? Did somebody else make him lunch? Were there more people in the house? You know, did he have a neighbor or a mom or a wife? I mean, I don't even know. Was he married? I don't know. Probably not, but I don't know. Maybe he was. I don't know. Anyway, so who else was in the house? What were they doing? I'm trying to make it come alive so I can make a movie out of it, right? What kind of house did he live in? We know they didn't have window panes back then. So was it a windy day? Was there wind coming through? Was it raining? Was it overcast? Because, you know, God wanted everything somber when he spoke to Jonah. I don't know. but I can decide. So in my mind, it's a nice summery day and there's white puffy clouds. And what can I hear? You know, I can hear goats and I can hear lambs and I can hear cows. And there's kids playing because he lived in a city. So I can hear all these things. See what I'm doing? I'm making it come alive to me. And if it can come alive to me, I can make it come alive to the kids. So once I add all those details and I decide everything, what color were his clothes, you know, he had to walk down to the docks. We happen to live by docks, so all those details are easy for me, you know, the seagulls and the ships creaking and all of that. Once I make it alive to me, now I'm going to tell the story, adding in all those details. But here's what you have to do is, because the kids believe everything that you say. They trust you. So if I tell them Jonah was eating lunch and he heard God's voice, they think it's in the Bible, right? So I always tell them, I'm going to tell you the story of Jonah today. And the Bible doesn't tell us everything about that story. So I've thought about some things and here's what I think happened. And then I'll tell them what I think it's like and I'll set up the scene and the breeze and, you know, the blue sky and all of that. But when I get to the parts of the story that are in the Bible, then I stop and say, okay, that's what I think it was like, but here's what I know is true because the Bible says it. And then I'll tell that part of the story. And I can go back and forth like that through the whole story. Always, always tell them what you're making up and what's true. A lot of reasons for that. But the main one is because they believe everything you say. Let's say you're telling the third grader the story and they think everything you said is true because you haven't told them that you made some of it up. Well, they get into, you know, upper grades and they read the story of Jonah in the Bible and none of that is in there. My teacher lied to me. Mm-hmm. Well, if she lied to me about that, then maybe Jesus can't forgive everything that I did. Maybe that was a lie too. So it's a good technique. We just want to protect it. And it's easy to do. Just say, this is the part that you made up. But just make sure that you do that. Especially with everything our kids have. You know, anything anyone thinks of, they can see on the screen. So we want them to know what's real and what's not real. But it's a fun, fun technique. And sometimes I let the kids make it up. You know, what do you think it was like that day? What kind of weather do you want? You know, and so they'll be involved that way. And then I'll tell the story with their details. Again, reminding them that we don't know this part is true. Find a story from your own life to make a point. This is a great one for kids. And of course, you have to be age appropriate. And I'll tell you one from mine. You have to be okay with people making fun of you because of the dumb things that you do. But I have plenty of those stories. One time, let's see, which one should I tell you today? Because there have been so many. One time, because, you know, we've gone on missions trips and we went down to Mexico and I don't speak Spanish. So I was happy to go. I mean, it was great. But whenever there came time to tell the story or do any evangelism, I couldn't do anything. You know, I would pray and, you know, whatever, carry lunches, but, you know, give out clothes and food. But I started to get really dissatisfied with that. So, but we went down every 3 months. So one time I went home and I just thought, you know what can I do? Well, what do I love to do? I love to crochet. So, okay, you know what? I'll crochet a blanket. And then the next time we go, when we give out clothes and blankets, I'll be able to give a blanket. And I'll pray as I crochet it, you know, I'll pray that they come to know the love of Jesus and they'll see that, you know, and I just, you know, all these wonderfully spiritual things that I'm praying for this person who's going to get my blanket as I'm crocheting it. Now, doesn't that make you want to know me? Don't I sound like, isn't that godly of me, right? It was. And so I'm crocheting the blanket. Now it comes time for our missions trip, and I'm taking the blanket with me, but it's not going in the back in a bag like all those other blankets. Oh, no. My blanket, because it's so special, is sitting on the front seat with me, and it did. Cross the border crossing, the whole time we're down there. Now it's time to go give out the blankets. But again, I am not putting it back there to be given out like some lame old blanket everybody else is given, because mine is special. So we get to this community, Las Pulgas it was called, and we had to hike there and the bus broke down. And as we're hiking there through this ravine, we find out that it is a hotbed of robbers, right? So I'm like, oh, you know what my husband says to me? I've always had a dream that we would do something like this. And I'm like, can you just tell me the rest of your dreams? Because I might be absent on that trip. But anyway, so we get to the little community back there and we're handing out they're handing out food and clothes from the back of the truck. I have my blanket. right, like this, right? So I see a lady over there, so, you know, with a proper look of humility and, you know, on my face, I walk over and I can all speak English, remember? So I just offer her my blanket, right? And she goes, it's okay, it's not the right person, no problem. So then I walk over and, you know, she's like, she doesn't want it either. I could not give that blanket away to anyone, and I was so mad, right? And as I'm mad about no one wanting my precious, godly blanket that I made, the Lord spoke to me and he said, now you know what a Pharisee looks like. Doing everything right on the outside, but on the inside, God saw my plan. You know what my plan was? I'm going to give you this blanket. You were going to die that night because you were going to freeze to death, but my blanket saved your life. And you're so grateful that you tell a cousin in a bigger city, and then she tells a cousin in Mexico City, who happens to work for the government, actually happens to work for the president of Mexico. So she tells the president of Mexico, he is so impressed that somebody from another country loves his people that he's going to want to know who she is. Well, she doesn't know, so it goes back down the line. She doesn't know. I just know they're from Calvary Chapel South Bay. Goes back up the line. He calls Pastor Steve, who calls the missions pastor, who says it was me. I get flown, all expenses paid, to Mexico City, and I get a humanitarian award for saving her life. Okay. I did not want to admit to myself that that's what I was doing it, but when the Lord asked me, do you know what a Pharisee looked like? I had to face the truth, right? That's what a Pharisee is. Yeah, do you get it? Okay, so promise me that you won't think that every time you look at me now because I learned my lesson, okay? So if you have a story from your life that can make the Bible come true, then use that. Become a character from the story and tell it from that character's perspective. Think back to a story. Give me another story that kids have heard. Oh my goodness, I think, are we supposed to be done? Okay, so don't be Jonah, be a fish that swam by the boat and saw Jonah fall in. I don't know. Audience participation was kind of like this. Every time you see water, they say water. Sorry. How to prepare to tell a story. You can read that on your own. I'm just going to say that doing it out loud and in front of a mirror is super, super important because you think you're being all dramatic when in real life you're going, and the Red Sea opened and they walked. Because you're not used to being that way. So do it in front of a mirror and I'm, okay, God bless you. Don't tell me we're in here and that's why you're late.